Hello, everyone, and welcome back to another episode of the Belgian Football Podcast. My name is Ben Jackson. I'll be your host. And this week we are all back together again. Joris and Scott are with me. How are you guys doing this evening?
Really good. How are you guys? Hello, everybody. That was a brilliant weekend of action. Really excited to get into this one.
Yeah, me too. Even though, obviously, I am actually in a way better mood than I should be, and that my team has been over the course of the last 24 hours. But yeah, despite that, let's dive in.
I mean, at least your team didn't get relegated this past week, so there's swings and roundabouts, I guess.
Fair enough.
That's the only time I'm going to mention that. Let's move on to the Belgian stuff. We kicked off this weekend's action on Saturday with Union against Club Brugge. Just a reminder that if my stats are correct, Union have not beaten Club Brugge in the league since returning to the Pro League. They've been a little bit of like a bogey side for them throughout that period. But coming to this after their defeat to Antwerp in the week, Union did kind of need the 3 points if they were going to get back into the title race. For Club Brugge, they're like incredibly, incredibly small chances of the title race basically hung on this game. Lose or draw and you're basically out. They dominated all the possession, 72% of it, but it was Union who took the lead first. A long ball from C. Van der Heyen, switching it over to Victor Boniface. He chests it, well, he kind of awkwardly controls it alongside Spielers, but Spielers can't get the ball off him as he takes another touch. And it's kind of like awkward touch, incredibly sublime finish. It's all a bit weird, all very Victor Boniface, maybe, I don't know. Fantastic finish from him into the bottom corner. They then make it 2-0 pretty much straight away after half time. Not the best of back passes. Lazar Mani's in to make it 2-0 to Union. And that's basically how it stays until Hans Van Aken grabs one back for Club Brugge in the 93rd minute. I thought it was quite interesting, guys, like with, I don't know, I guess it was about 10, 12 minutes to go. Rick DeMille brings off Noah Lang for Abakar Silla, which I thought was a strange decision. Abakar Silla then actually gets an assist for the goal, so maybe he's seen something we don't see from him. And he also brings on Dennis Adoy for Jorne Spielers. So I thought it was a, yeah, interesting kind of tactical decision there from Rick DeMille to bring off Lang when they needed the win. In the end of the day, Union do get the 3 points. They finally beat Club Brugge. And with everything that happens this weekend, this is actually a vital 3 points for them. Also good to see Boniface scoring again in the league. He actually, while he's been kind of the go-to man in kind of the Europa League, his league numbers are like almost the same, I think, aren't they? It's kind of, he got 6 goals in the Europa League and then he's got, 8 goals in the league. So his Europa League form's actually been, in terms of goals, been better than his league form. So to see him score is probably quite a nice boost for Union. But to get that kind of Club Brugge monkey off their back would have been really, really good for them and especially the fans.
Yeah, it's been quite a week for them, going from the Antwerp game, which was hugely disappointing for them, to getting their first win against clubs since 1960. I mean, the Jan Breydel wasn't even built last time they beat them. I mean, admittedly, they've been away for 48 years, back for a couple. That's a big factor in this, but still rather extraordinary. And, you know, all of that experience of that last year, kind of coming home to roost for them. Really efficient Union this week. Everything that kind of club weren't, in a way. You know, Ben was talking about how much of the ball club had, and I had a bit of deja vu watching this game, because although club didn't play badly, you know, that thing of having a lot of the ball but actually doing very little with it was you know, back on display again, which is something they're going to have to find a solution to, whether it's going to be Rick DeMille's problem to solve or somebody else's, likely somebody else's, you know, time will tell. But they have to make more of the ball when they've got it, because they are kind of quite wasteful in a way in this game, which Union weren't. They absolutely took their chances. And, you know, like, coming back to Boniface for a minute, he's such a good instinctive striker. You know, he gets into great positions and he just hits it. He never overthinks it for the most part. He might try and dribble a wee bit too much and take on one man too many, but he's, you know, when it comes to his finishing, he'll get into an area and he'll instinctively hit it. And the thing I love about this goal is, and we shared it from our account, is he takes one touch, which buys him the space, and he actually doesn't look up. He knows what he's going to do, and he knows exactly where he is. And, you know, he's very difficult to play against when, you know, when he's doing things like that to you. Union, really, really impressive. And to go there after the week they've had and to kind of completely take Club Brugge out of things now, which I think they were before anyway, but obviously this has put it to bed, was really impressive, and they were delighted with that. They now have a double header coming up against Genk, and because of the way other results have gone, it looks like they might have to win both of those if they're really going to push a certain side who had a very good weekend, who we'll get to shortly.
Impressive is maybe not the word I would use about the performance, but it's good that they got the win. But like, I still have am a bit underwhelmed so far, despite the win, with the performances both from both these sides in this game. Actually, this might come back to haunt me really quickly, as Scott mentioned. But like, so far in the playoff Union are not riled up yet as they have been in the league. But that might also indeed be a good thing for them if they can get it back on track as well. And if they would have lost this one, that might have been too late already. But now they're definitely still very much in it. Boniface, Ben touched on it. It's the first goal is since February in the leagues, which is an awful long time as well. Despite the win, of course, and that late goal, it doesn't change anything except for the defensive confidence, I guess. I've really been hitting that nail too much, I guess, but last few weeks. But yeah, there's two teams that have a defensive issue, as Union have not have kept a clean sheet in the last 12 league games, which is again an awful lot long time. And of course, my own team Genk have a similar issue. Might be even longer. I didn't dug up the stats there, but. Either way, I do remember the last clean sheets were against bottom teams for Genk anyway. Mignolet, finally getting his golden boots in front of the stadium. And then, it's a bit unfortunate to concede that second goal. Of course, that deflection does not help him, but yeah, for some reason the commentators and the media were quite kind to him, but he himself was honest enough to say, yeah, I should have had that. That's that. And yeah, this result, of course, for Club Brugge means, well, this both results in this playoff this weekend actually mean for Club Brugge that not only first place is out of sight, but actually even third place is very far away from them for them now, which actually plays into favor of all teams that are still playing them. And there's one team that still has to play them twice. So there's a lot of momentum switching going towards that Antwerp. There's really not that much to play for in these playoffs, except for their honor. They've already been playing with a lot of youngsters as well. Oh yeah, that was one thing I wanted to highlight here as well. Could also go into the 1B section, Challenger Pro League section, but yeah, that Club Brugge and Club Next have to play at the same time during the weekend. It doesn't feel very fair towards the promotions, the battle inside that Challenger Pro League, to be honest. But that's another topic. Maybe we'll return to that in a bit. But yeah, that's a bit weird, especially since Club Brugge are now playing with a lot of youngsters, a bit out of necessity, and also, well, since indeed the season is a bit over for them, I guess. But let's see what they still can do in the remaining four games. They can still decide things, of course, but let's see.
Yeah, I wonder if, because we've seen obviously some players have played the game for the seniors and then gone and played a game for the second team this year. Maybe you could play one half in Bruges and for the seniors, and then like race across the Bevern to play the second half, and just see what kind of happens. Absolute chaos we could have there. It could be quite funny. I know Anderlecht, obviously their second team's got a chance of doing something in that title race. And I was like, I wonder how many of their players are going to be kind of those first team players, like the guys on the other fringes, will make it into that one. Who knows? While we're on this topic of Club Bruges, we may as well go in for some of the listener questions we had. We've got the first one that I've got on my list is from Gordon Wright, and he asked, do you think Van Aken will move overseas? I might just quickly take this one because I think we're probably maybe all of the same opinion. Depends where. in the sense that I don't think he's going to get a top five move anymore. I think that's kind of, that should have happened last year, but then he signed that big contract. So in my opinion, I don't think he moves overseas. I think he's going to be there now until he gets the former treatment, to be honest. I think that's kind of what's going to happen to him, which I've always been in kind of two minds about it, depending on like what the club wants and what the player wants. If the player's happy where he is and has enjoyed playing for Club Bruges and still wants to fight for titles and stuff, then I think it's great that he wants to stay in Belgium and play for that team, and he's like clearly content there. But if Club Bruges ever felt like when they move him on, maybe they should have probably moved Former on quicker. They probably should have moved Van Aken last summer. I think we've all kind of said that. But I don't really see him moving anywhere. I don't know if you guys disagree. I think maybe eventually he might move to, I don't know, like the MLS or somewhere like that. But at the moment, I don't think he's going to be going anywhere.
No, I don't see him going anywhere either, largely because of that contract that he was given last summer, which didn't really make any business sense at all. I remember us talking about that at the time, as you were saying, Ben. I think sometimes players get themselves into a situation where they become almost untouchable, and I think Hans Van Aken is one of those players. I'm a fan of his, I should say that, and I do want to stress that, because I'm going to be quite critical here, but I think it's got to the point now for him where he is almost untouchable, and you can't leave him out of the side, whether he should be or not, and that's not a healthy position for a club to be in, albeit he has had a very decent season all round. But I think the chances of him playing somewhere else now are pretty small, unless, like Ben says, it is somewhere like the MLS, you know, for a year, 18 months on a really big contract. But I think that's highly unlikely now. And he's very happy in Belgium, so I think the chances of it are kind of quite small now.
To put it in a business context, I guess I think he's a bit in a golden cage now. I agree.
Great. I thought that, yeah, that'd be the easier one. Another one from Rob Neerlink. What does Club Bruges need to do to become contenders again? And I mean, this is probably a podcast in itself at the moment, because I think it's kind of linked to the Van Aken position, isn't it? In the sense that they need a refresh of the squad. But I also think they feel a little bit directionless. I think that is obviously at the moment because we just don't know what's going on with the coach. We don't know what's going to go on with the players. And I think if they, in the summer, like sell, they're obviously going to sell Buchanan. I think he's going to Inter, which is a very impressive move for him. Whether he's done enough to earn it is kind of up for debate. Noah Lang should be sold. Like, it's time to move on from Noah Lang. I think, again, most people would agree on that one. And then it's kind of like, they need to sort out kind of some of the transfers, because where they've been missing, apart from probably Jukla, and again, like, he's been inconsistent, but in terms of like striker wise, they've not really hit for a long time now. They've been trying loads of different varieties, then rotating the trainers. So I think a little bit of like consistency in terms of that would be good. Getting the right coach, I think, is the main thing. That I think the other stuff be fine. They've got talented youngsters as well that will come through, but I don't think Victor Mills should be the person they turn to full time. I think that'd be a mistake. I do think they need to go and find someone, because you look at the guys in this playoff that he's up against, and you've got someone like Mark Van Bommel, who's obviously failed twice, but he's clearly learnt from that. Gerrit, he came in understudy to Mazu, but then he's kind of put his own style on it. He's tactically quite an interesting coach. And then obviously you've got Franken, who's done a really good job at Mechelen, now coming into Genk, and he just plays this really exciting attacking football. And these three seem like they're quite a level above where Victor Miller's at the moment in terms of coaching and stuff. So that's the one area I think they need to definitely target if they have any hope of being contenders, is the coach, because we saw it last year. They got Schroeder in and they came back to win the league, whereas this year they got Parker in and they went the other way.
Yeah, I think Ben's already used the keyword in refresh, and that, you're right, Ben, that goes back to the coach. You know, they set the standard and the template, and I think if they get the right coach and they decide what they want, a new coach should be able to come in and reset things. And that includes, and this is just my own view, that includes getting rid of a lot of players there who I think maybe aren't sufficiently motivated anymore for whatever reason, perhaps because they've won enough at the club and need just a fresh challenge in themselves somewhere else. So I think there needs to be less tinkering. You know, there's been a lot of, you know, small changes, you know, whether it's a change of striker or whatever, like you were saying, and a change of coach who they hope can, you know, work with the ingredients are there. But I think it needs a new coach who comes in with fresh ideas and wants to completely freshen things up, which means some bigger changes on the pitch than I think people realise, actually. And this comes back to the Hans van Aken point about players who I think maybe have been at the club for too long and are too comfortable. Obviously, he's been there longer than most, but there are others who've been there, I think, long enough for the shine to come off a little bit and for them to probably need a fresh challenge. So yeah, a reset button, and I think that means finding a coach who wants to do something different. There's a lot of talented young players coming up through Club Next, and I'm not sure they'll all necessarily get a chance. I don't think they're going to go down the road that DeMille is kind of prioritising, which in the short term is going to help because he's going to blood some of that young talent and they're going to get some game time at the moment. But I'm not sure whoever's there for the start of next season is going to go down that road. The owners at the club, I think, are going to demand success, and they're not going to allow whoever that T1 is time to do that. So it's going to require somebody, as Ben was saying, I think, with a bit more experience and a real vision, and the drive will come from them. We just need to find out who that's going to be.
Yeah, well, good that you guys are doing all my dirty work. I don't need to say a lot here. Indeed, the manager is going to be crucial. And then, yeah, well, indeed, I do think a bit of an overhaul of some players in the squad as well, which in general still has enough quality, should have enough quality to at least be contenders for the titles. It's not even, and I do expect them to have a lot of business and see where that brings next year. But I expect them to be achieving that as well, that they should be back next year as well.
Yeah, no, definitely. I think we're not talking like kind of all those other clubs that you think they need like a reset and like periods of transition. I think Joris is right. It's like they should be able to compete for the title next year. But it will be interesting to see how the no Champions League football kind of impacts their recruitment and that, to see if that really does have an effect, because financially they've still got the money they need to kind of bring in some quality players. So it'll be interesting to see if some players that they would normally be able to target kind of say, no, actually I'll go somewhere else where either a higher league or with Champions League football. Let's go to playoff two, where they're definitely not playing for Champions League football, that's for sure. Ghent wish they would have been in the top four, but they're not. They are in the next tier down. They travelled to Standard Liège, a game that for Standard would have been, if they'd won that, they could have really put some pressure on to Ghent and overtaken them. Didn't get off to the best of starts for them, unfortunately, though. Hugo Kuipers picked the ball up with a just fantastic through ball, completely took Mervil Bacardi out of the game. Gift Orban running onto it, he smashes it in within half an hour to make it 1-0. Steven Alzate then equalises from an Aaron Donham set piece, but before that happened at half time, well, literally from kickoff, Gift Orban just shot, which was just mental. Like, if you haven't seen it, you got to find it because ridiculous. It was like proper kids football, Sunday league football, where you just like, you see the keeper messing about. Sunday league is probably having a fag and you're like, oh, I may as well just shoot because he's not looking. But Boutte wasn't, it wasn't like he wasn't looking, but he almost gets caught out as it hits the bar. It was unbelievable. This guy is just absolutely audacious. And then, within kind of 10 minutes of that happening, Standard a level, Aaron Donham with the ball in from a free kick. Steven Alzate puts it in, just completely unmarked. Horrendous defending from Ghent. But I'm just getting all my kind of stats and stuff mixed up to work out what happened when, because this game was actually a little bit bizarre at times. Hugo Kuipers did make it 2-1 to Ghent after Bodart made just horrendous mistake trying to clear the ball, gave it straight to Kuipers, who tucked it in. But before that, we'd had this bizarre incident where Emond goes down in the box, referee doesn't give a penalty, waves it away. As Ghent counter, he just randomly blows his whistle, but no one hears it. So Ghent on the counter go and score, what looked to be a completely legitimate goal. But then the ref runs over and is like, give me the ball, and goes back and does a drop ball. It was absolutely mental. Like, Hein was just standing there, like, livid. I'm pretty sure this happened. I think it happened at 1-1, which is why I think I messaged you guys. Like, I think if they don't win this, Hein's just going to explode, because this was absolutely probably the worst refereeing decision I've seen for a very long time, because it just didn't make any sense as to why he didn't just let the game kind of flow, reach its natural conclusion. Because what, like, the counter-attack can go ahead and then you can check what the penalty was. Like, you don't need to stop the game to check the penalty, which wasn't a penalty anyway. They didn't give it. So that was a bit bizarre. But thankfully, I guess, for Hein's sake, they did get the win. Steven Alzate's been sent off with 84 minutes on the clock as well. Ghent get the win and take full control now of the group. They've got a five-point buffer to Standard Liège and Cercle Brugge, we'll talk about in a bit. But, I mean, I'll be interested to hear what you guys think about this game, but I've just found Standard really lacked any potency up front in this game. I thought they were really, really lacking in any sort of attacking threat, to be honest. Like, it felt proper like we're only going to score from a set piece, whereas Ghent with Kuipers and Orban, you always just felt that they had a chance of scoring a goal.
Yeah, completely agree. Also, I believe that bizarre situation, which is really a reason why a referee should never whistle again, in my opinion, but okay. It was at 0-1. So it would have been a 0-2 already. So, well, basically deciding the game. Yeah, luckily for him, I suppose, for his sake, and for Hans' sake as well, Van Haasbroek's sake. They did win in the end, but yeah, Standard indeed. They didn't really feel like they were not really into this game that much. Okay, they could score on set piece, but that's anywhere else it was not really coming from. There was quite a flat performance. Ghent was not necessarily super impressive either, but they did well. They have their goals in them, and yeah, they definitely, based on the chances, deserved that win. Especially with that additional goal for no reason disallowed. It's really an outrageous decision, honestly, an explanation as well. But indeed. And like, for Standard, it's that lack of consistency again still. So it's biting them in the rear end. And yeah, that's Alzate going from hero to anti-hero in the span of half an hour as well, of course, as you mentioned. Kuipers scoring his 21st, which puts him on top of the goal scorer table, which could be important to get a goal again, as we will touch on another striker who bagged a few this weekend later on. And Orban getting his 11th, and that's in only half a season. That's equally impressive, I suppose. And I would even say that this is probably already the decisive gap, 5 points with only 12 to go. Yeah. With a wild card, maybe still for Cercle Brugge, since they have the double header now, so they could immediately take charge, but they will have to win both of the encounters against Ghent, I think. And I believe they've been doing quite well against Ghent this season, so it's not completely out of the cards, but I do stay with my prediction of Ghent winning this playoff even further now. It's looking good for them, the as long as these goals are coming anyway.
Yeah, I think Joris is right about Ghent having this almost sealed, although it's not done yet. I think it's going to be difficult to catch them now, despite how good Cercle have been, and we'll get to them shortly. Interesting, you know, Ben was talking about, you know, the potency of Ghent's strike force, and I think Ronnie Dyla and Fergal Harkin saw exactly what it is that their own side is missing, and that's a strike partnership that not only are very good individually, but together seem to be effective and take their chances when they don't get that many in a game as well. It's a bit like Union this weekend. They didn't create many opportunities, but they took the ones that they did get. The refereeing decision, that's just and we shared this on our Twitter, so if you scroll back in our feed, you'll see that moment as well. It just absolutely bizarre, and there's been some rather strange things said about that as well this weekend, you know, to explain what that was actually about, or rather inexplicable. Of course, it doesn't matter, thankfully, you know, as you were saying, guys, because Ghent got the win, which saved Big Hein turning up on the FA's doorstep with quite a lot to say. And I'm thankful in a way that they did get the win, because I think his blood pressure would have been, you know, he's had a few contentious decisions to rail against over the last while, and that would have topped them all, I think. So, you know, that's good for his being able to sleep at night. But a good win for Ghent, and as Joris was saying, you know, standards and consistency, you know, kind of coming back to bite them. Interesting as well, because obviously they've done very well against the top sides on the whole this season. So they went into this game, I think, probably with, you know, feeling quite good about themselves, especially being at home. Another fantastic atmosphere at Slessen, as it always is. But Standard, you know, doing nowhere near enough to get anything out of this game.
No, I think I messaged you guys, didn't I? And I was just like, if they play another flipping long ball over the top to Emond to try and outpace Akumu and Tuanarega, like, I'm going to turn it off. It was painful viewing. When they have Ahayo on the bench, he's obviously a lot quicker than Emond.
Yeah.
And, like, can get him behind. I think, to be fair, like, hats off to, I thought it's one of the best games I've seen Aaron Donham play in a Standard shirt. I think, like, in terms of just, like, getting on the ball and trying to make things happen, it felt like he was a lot more effective in this one. He got the assist from the set piece, but it just felt like there was nothing really to play off of up front. Like, to be fair to Emond, he's coming back from an injury, like, he's still getting used to it. But it's interesting that Dyler's gone. I think he went with him for the physicality against those, that kind of defence, but it just didn't really work for them, unfortunately. And I think, yeah, like you said, Scott, they know what they need to do in the summer. And yeah, maybe Joris, we should just ban referees from having whistles. That could be quite a better way of doing it. Just have like a foghorn on the side that just kind of gives off a noise whenever they need to kind of stop the game, because that, it was just, and no one heard him anyway. That's what was so ridiculous about it. Like, no one knew it even been blown. It's just awful decision making. One side that definitely weren't awful in front of goal was Cercle Bruges when they travelled to Vesterlo. Obviously Vesterlo, knowing that if they really wanted to kind of do anything in playoff two, they needed to get back to winning ways. For Cercle, they'd opened with that 0-0 draw against Standard, but arguably been the better side. They kind of start to find their shooting boots in this one. Thibaut Sommers, after 5 minutes from Olivier Demand cross, made it 1-0. Ueda then converted a penalty a couple of minutes later to make it 2-0 with just only 20 minutes gone, I think it was. Nene Douglas, remember him? He's finally got a start, which is the first time since March, I think it was. He didn't start a game in April. Then the most he played was 45 minutes, which is bizarre when you think Lyle Foster left. He gets a scrappy one to make it 2-1. But then Leonardo da Silva Lopez, with probably the goal of the game. Actually, to be fair, Douglas then scores one. It's literally identical. Him and Douglas score exactly the same sort of goal, but cuts inside and smashes it into the top corner. Don't think we've ever seen that from him. Didn't actually know he had it in his locker. So flair play to Leonardo da Silva Lopez. That was a fantastic finish from him. Ueda then converts his second penalty, and it's 4-1 to Cercle at half-time, and they're pretty much in dreamland. De Rock makes a sub at half-time, just switches round defenders, which is interesting, and brings on Tuur Dix as well. Nene Douglas then somehow just about manages to get his second goal. Running through, he just hits it straight at Majecki. The ball kind of ricochets to him. Marcelin probably should have done a little bit better, but he's trying to shield it to give it back to Majecki, and Douglas just kind of gets there first. So at that point, it's 4-2, maybe Wessler back in it, but then Thibaut Sommers gets his second of the game. Really, really nice finish from him. He's starting to look a little bit more confident in front of goal, that's for sure. So that's 5-2. Then, yeah, the goal I was talking about, Nene Douglas cutting in and smashing it into the top corner to make it 5-3 in the end. So plenty of goals, but guys, as we've just been saying, it sets up now with Cercle. They've got Ghent back-to-back in these next couple of games. Win both of them and they'll be top of playoff two. I mean, it's a big ask, but I guess if they'd looked at it at the beginning of the playoffs, this is kind of the situation they'd have, if you'd offered it to them, this is the one they'd have probably taken, because they just still have a chance at this point.
Yeah, I think while it is a big ask, Joris did point out earlier, and he's right, that Cercle have done very well against Ghent this season. So stranger things have happened, and they're very, very motivated and focused at the moment, Circle, I think. So it's going to be interesting to see if they can do it. I mean, they had a brilliant weekend here. You know, everything went in the back of the net this weekend. That's how good they were offensively. Spare a thought for poor Nimes Dorgelis. Scoring a hat-trick but still finishing up on the losing side is not something that happens that often. So that's a bit of a sore one that caused me a kind of a wry smile. I've been really impressed, actually, with the way that Circle have been doing their opposition analysis for a while now. They've become really good at identifying weaknesses in the opposition and where to exploit them. And you can only really do that when you're confident about the way that you want to play as a team as well, and having that understanding of your own strengths. So being able to exploit Westerlo's kind of offensive power, which is where they've been at their best, and that openness, and knowing because of that that they're going to leave a bit of space for you. You know, if you press high and you press at the right moments, then you're going to get opportunities for high turnovers and to get down their throat, which is exactly what they did. And Circle have become really good. And we were talking a little bit about this, everyone, before we started recording, that, you know, they've become excellent at identifying those triggers. And I think they're becoming better at it as well, and it's giving them a lot of confidence. And it's nice, you know, Mira Muzlic, the T1 at Circle, does his press conferences on a Friday in English, and they're always quite revealing, because Miron, and I don't know whether he does this deliberately or not, but he's very open in his press conferences, and it's almost like he's giving you a clue tactically as to where he knows the opposition's weakness are, which I find kind of quite interesting. And it's very reflective of the club, who are very open as well. But a brilliant weekend for Circle, and they're absolutely still in it. And because their confidence is high, I think they will still fancy their chances.
They definitely will. And yeah, why shouldn't they, of course? But yeah, Ueda reaching his 20 goals as well now, like I mentioned. On the heels of Kuipers now, one goal behind them. And it looks to be going between those two for a top scorer title. Yeah, and I also had the Nene point, like scoring a hat-trick and yet losing. Yeah, save a prayer for him, I guess. maybe that's a bit too dramatic, but still, like it indeed doesn't happen so often.
Do we know if Nene took the ball home? I mean, normally you would in these circumstances, but maybe he took it with him and then just booted it away when he left the ground.
It's very much possible, very much possible. Yeah, and for Westerlo, the season seems to be slightly petering out, which is no shame. It's already a very big achievement making these playoffs, but now two losses in a row, and also the last weeks inside the regular season, it was already also not going as it used to be before. So, there's no shame in that, like I said, but it seems to be a bit of the case. For them, and let's hope for them that they still have some games where they can show some nice things as well, and score some more hat-tricks and maybe win some games as well while doing so. And they're still always in for like no boring games with them. The high scoring games, it has been a while, I believe, now, but yeah, they featured a few of them this season.
They do, and I think maybe this is time for something for another episode, but I find I'm really interested to see what they do in the summer, actually, Westerlo, because a lot of their key players are loanees.
Yes, definitely. Yeah,
it's going to be really interesting. Yeah, really interesting to see like who they're able to keep, where, how they replace these guys. Because yeah, De Kuyper is obviously going to go back to Club Bruges. Reynolds, we know that there's lots of other clubs interested in him, even in Belgium. Douglas, we've spoken about. Even if, like I was saying, Douglas, I believe this was his first start. Yeah. Since March, but even then he's only really started what I think it's like a couple of games this year, this calendar year, like since February anyway. Like it's been a weird one because it's not like he's been injured, he's been on the bench, he just hasn't really been starting. Van der Kabus, I don't know when his loan expires, but again, another one on loan from Club Bruges. Chadli, I saw a lot of talk in the press about how they want to keep him, but then I think one of the guys that follows Westerlo for the papers was like, why? Like, he was really slating Chadli. Like, he was like, everything he does makes the team worse. I was like, oh, that is brutal. So interesting, yeah, to see what they do there. Like, Tajir at the back as well. Ravil Tajir's on loan from Istanbul Başakşehir. So yeah, Wessler are definitely one of those teams I'm kind of keeping a slight eye on and not like a massive concern for, because I think then they've got the finances obviously from the Lyle Foster deal, so they can reinvest them. But definitely one to keep an eye on to see how they back up this season in going into next one. But yeah, I think for Circle, it's these next two games are completely a free hit. There's no pressure on them, like, really. It's kind of, if they, all the pressure's on Ghent to win this playoff, there's nothing on Circle. If they do it, it's amazing. If they don't, still a good season. Let's now finally, I'm sure everyone's probably been waiting for this one, head over to the Bossel Stadium for Antwerp against Genk. This was the big one of the weekend, the one everyone was looking forward to. Great atmosphere, as expected, from both sets of fans. Just such a shame that the old stand opposite the camera isn't ready for people to sit in, because you just think that it would have been absolutely rammed full with that one there. It'd been a great, great atmosphere. Genk take the lead in this one, though, and it's that goal-scoring sensation, Mark McKenzie. Three goals in a row now for big Mark McKenzie, the US national team defender. You just can't, after seeing him score twice in the previous week, surely you think in your prep for this game from a set piece, a Mike Tressel set piece, like, let's make sure we mark Mark McKenzie. But they didn't mark Mark McKenzie. He just had a complete free run at it, heads it. I don't know what you guys think, but I think Boutte actually does keep it out initially, and then on the rebound, obviously McKenzie taps it in. But initially, like, before I was like, oh, that's surely over the line. But every time I saw it, I was like, no, I think he actually makes quite a decent save. It's just, there's nothing he can do about the follow-up from McKenzie. It's a really just kind of, he's like, I'm getting this and I'm sticking it in the back of the net. So it's 1-0 to Genk at that point. And then just about 10 minutes later, VAR intervenes to give them a penalty after originally it had been given as a free kick on the edge of the box. Vincent Janssen steps up, but Martin van der Voort saves. So it stays at 1-0 to Genk. We then get another penalty, very controversial penalty given for Antwerp after a handball against Brian Heenan. Yeah, there's nothing he could really do about it to stop it. And it was all a bit, yeah, didn't feel like it should have been given as a penalty. But it's one of those ones they just, sometimes they're giving, sometimes they're not giving. It's really unclear as to what they're doing with it. Janssen was not given the ball this time. Instead, Toby Alderweireld stepped up and showed him how to do it by, I think he stuck it in exactly the same corner, but just with more power and more accuracy. Van der Voort does almost get them again, so that it could have been a remarkable double save for him. Half time, Antwerp make a sub. Unsurprisingly, Abnor Muja comes off. He'd not had a great game. Calvin Stengs comes on, but it's actually Balakwisha who makes the difference. Mujahid Sadiq, who's on with Questo on the bench, so lots of people obviously were always like, oh, why is he on? Was Questo? No, sorry, Questo wasn't on the bench. I can't quite remember who was on the bench. Anyway, Sadiq was starting and just had an absolute mare. Didn't see Balakwisha behind him. Balakwisha nips in, tucks it into an empty net to make it 2-1 just a couple of minutes after half time. This game had a lot of bite and a lot of spice, and it finally boiled over in the 96th minute. Mike Tressel gets himself sent off. Aziz Mohamed then gets a second yellow within the space of a couple of minutes to get himself sent off in the kind of ensuing fracas that kind of emerged out of that.
No, that was a straight red one as well.
The straight red. Okay, sorry. And I saw that someone put down that he'd been booked in the 91st, but then he was just given the straight red, not even a second yellow. Just straight off for, I didn't see it, but I think, yeah, Yoshi told us he's like, he touched the referee, but how much he touched the referee is unclear. But yeah, you do that, they're always just going to send you off. It tempers were not subdued at the end of the game. Security was on surrounding the referee. I think it was Munoz was shouting at someone. I couldn't quite see who he was shouting off. It, yeah, a kind of heated end to what was a heated game because there was just so much riding on it. But now Antwerp take control of the title playoff and have everything within their own hands. It was a good game. Like, it was, despite there not being a plethora of chances, it was kind of entertaining still because we knew how much was riding on it. But for Antwerp, they just had an incredible 7 days, basically.
Ooh, this one was spicy, wasn't it, guys? I've not seen a game quite as hot as this one for a while. I really enjoyed this. Anyone would think there was a title to be won. The way these two were going at it. Really, really enjoyable game. Not a lot of clear-cut chances, but very, very enjoyable stuff. Since Antwerp's return in January, I was talking about their points haul last week. Obviously, they've added to that over the last week. They've picked up and ignore the points halving. This is just, you know, points in total. They've picked up 42 out of a possible 54 points since coming back in January, which is unbelievably good form. Only two defeats and kind of three draws in that whole run as well. So the consistency is seriously impressive. And we spoke about their focus last week a lot. And I just wanted to chat a wee bit about their mental strength, because I think they really got under Genk's skin this week. And that was obviously part of the game plan. I think they did a really good job at squeezing the space, not allowing Genk any time in the ball. I thought Mandy Keita and Arthur Vermeeren were really good in the middle. I thought Batai, who obviously wasn't even down to start the game, only came in because Richie Delap broke down during the warm-up, I think, felt a tweak, and they had to change it. Avia, who, although not my favourite player, I thought from the point of view of getting in there and roughing up Trezor, which there was a lot of going on, that was a deliberate tactic from Antwerp's point of view. Physically, they were very, very strong. And they've done that a lot. We've talked about this on a number of occasions, how good they've been physically against particularly Genk and Union, sides that like to play passing offensive football. They've become very good at squeezing you physically and denying space and just upsetting rhythms so that sides, you know, don't get any traction at all. And they did that, you know, better than they've done all season. Really, really strong stuff. And when that melee kicked off in stoppage time at the end, I'm sure everybody spotted that rather cheeky wry smile of Mark Van Bommel's, who looked rather delighted with himself, almost as if that attempt to get under Genk's skin, you know, had exceeded expectations. I thought tactically, although he didn't do anything new, I think he got all of his calls right. And from his point of view, you know, it couldn't have gone any better. I think the way that Antwerp play means that, you know, they in a disciplinary sense, kind of tread quite a fine line. You know, they pick up a lot of yellow cards, but you're going to do that if you're a physical side. And it's just an element of the game which is really, really important in the Belgian Pro League, as we know. It's supposed from a Genk's perspective, how do you counter that? And I think Genk failed to really have any answers to that this weekend. And obviously Trezor's red card was, from an Antwerp perspective, the absolute icing in the cake, because it gives Wouter Franken a real problem now, and he's going to lose a massively important player for them going into the double header against Union, which I think from both of those sides' perspective, there's a good chance you know, they'll be looking to needing to win both of them in order to stay in Antwerp's coattails, because with them being top now, psychologically, that's a massive advantage. And a side that were mentally strong before, I think will be even stronger after this week.
Yeah, the most surprising thing here is probably that I just haven't even watched this game, because I had another appointment at the time. So maybe that was good for me as well. Second surprising thing is that I have to contradict Scott here, that despite Antwerp being having that reputation, I heard on the Vierkante Paal last week, they have the best discipline record of the league. Whether that says anything about the referees ring, about the perception of Antwerp, or about anything else, I'll leave that in the middle, but it's a very remarkable thing to see anyway, though.
That's interesting, yeah.
Yeah, that's yeah. That, but, yeah, so like I said, I can't really comment too much on the game, especially since I only have to base it on highlights, and like you said, there were not that many clear-cut chances. Yeah, just... Genk forgot to be too carried away. That's definitely has been the case. Yeah, of course, there are some referee decisions there that can be disputed, but even then, the Trezor red card, I believe there was also the question from, I believe it was from Dieter, our regular listener as well, about that. yeah, that's just a stupid one to get. But yeah, I think I told you guys as well before, like, it's a stupid one, but it just snapped, and Scott already gave some reasons for why that happened. This isn't making it better, I guess, but it was just one moment he snapped after the card was given, unlike what was going on the pitch after that. He went off quietly without like making any fuss about it anymore either. So I guess that shows a bit of character as well for him. But not his brightest moment, of course. After getting that 23rd assist and the official records as well now for that McKenzie goal as well. Well, and been asked about that. I still don't know. I'm sitting on the fence if whether it doesn't matter anyway. But if that ball initially was over the line or not, it was a good reflex anyway from Bute, whether it was in or not. Was it good? It was not good enough, but it was a good one to already halt that ball initially a little bit. Unfortunately, Sadiq didn't have the best of games. I like Sadiq as a player, to be honest, but the one thing that you also could see last week against Gulbrugen as well, like playing out of the back, he sometimes needs too much time. And that has unfortunately shown on that second goal. And that wasn't already before that, preceded by that initial stupid foul on the edge of the box for the first penalty. Not his best game, unfortunately. And yeah, too many players. Yeah, getting carried away. Not only players, I think there's a bit of too much frustration around the whole squad team in recent weeks and months. Maybe also because of the results. I also know some fans actually like that because Genk has always been a bit of a easy team, easygoing team. Maybe sometimes a bit too relaxed on occasion. Yeah, I personally don't think it's the best way to go further into that and to go too much too far into showing frustrations on and off the pitch. In the end, my personal feeling is that it will only instead of helping you will only get worse. Also worth to mention, whether that was a Genk fan or not, I do not know, but just the hate, the abuse that Alderweireld got on social media after the game, of course, is it should be condemned. And regardless of whoever that was or whatever his affiliation is as well, but that's another thing to mention. Also, maybe additionally then, that Gent had to I'll connect this then, even if it's a different game, that Gent had to send a mail send a statement and are looking with the police towards some hate towards Orban that are a bit of the sad things around Belgian football in this past weekend. But maybe it's a good thing that at least people are openly now condemning it, I guess, as well, and are not sitting on the fence, even from the clubs that are involved or could be involved. And McKenzie getting his third injury, all from his set piece indeed. So that's definitely worth a mention, because before he didn't have any, so that's good. And for Antwerp, that first penalty, that was the first missed penalty in 11 attempts this season as well. Everything is still to play for. But yes, one of the teams, I agree with Scott, that one of the teams in the bell with Genk and Unio probably will have to get both games, have to win both games, one to kick out the other team, and secondly, out of the race, and secondly, to stay in the race with Antwerp, who have now like I was hinting at before, maybe given how things have turned out, the best possible fixture lists in the next few games, of course, as well. So if they do what they are supposed to do in the next two games, there's a lot of pressure and riding on the wall, riding on all games or all of both the other teams in that race. So that's definitely very important. all still to play for everything in one point, guys. So in a way, it's exciting. Trezor luckily seems to be only missing one game. And I've heard, again, unfortunately, I didn't see it, but at least Oyen had a really good sub performance, so that hopefully he will also be able to take over a bit of that role. Set pieces, that's always a different thing. They've been crucial as well for Genk the last, well, all season actually. They scored, I believe, 26 or something, a staggering amount of number anyway, of goals on set pieces this season. And that's another thing, of course. But inside the play, if Oye can fill that gap a bit, with Tolu coming back as well, and hopefully Cuesta, who was, I think he indeed was not on the bench, but he's definitely coming back soon. Hopefully already against Union, he could be back as well. There are some needed new faces, I suppose, coming back, and let's see. It's too much to ask from them, of course, to have an immediate huge impact, but if they can at least give some more options as well still, and can only be good. And let's see if they can help Genk even this season still.
Yeah, I think you've pretty much summed up the whole game there between the two of you. Great analysis, guys. I think we probably kind of have just answered, but we did have a question from Richard David Pike on, are Antwerp now title favourites given their doubleheader next versus a Club Brugge side stuck in fourth with not much to play for, while Genk and Union will be damaging each other in the doubleheader? I'll hand over to you guys because I feel like I've answered the question so far. But yeah, do you guys think Antwerp are still favourites, or do you think, like Joris said, still within a point, it could still be very, very open?
Yeah, I do think they are favourites, but the one thing that's is, of course, this long-standing rivalry between those two clubs. Like if Brugge now they are all in a position that they, they really, if they have to choose, this is the team they will least likely want to win the title now. Especially, it doesn't help in that case, or it does help. Also, it does probably not matter too much, but that Antwerp could actually get a double before Club Brugge does, even after being so dominant in the league in the last few years. I'm sure this is the one team they really don't want to win, given additionally with the rivalry between the presidents as well, and of course between the fans already, the very fierce rivalry. But I fear that the current Club Brugge squad is a bit too depleted. It depends a bit on who is available and all to really make a difference to this, like you guys said, focused Antwerp squad at the moment. That's also a query. Maybe Antwerp now will feel a bit more of pressure as well, of course, that old thing of being the first now, being in top and having to perform and being slightly more difficult to them. I do still feel, short answer, yes, that it's this fixture list is a bit in favor in the next two games for Club Brugge, for Antwerp, of course.
I completely agree with everything Joris just said there.
Great. I mean, that makes it nice and easy for us, doesn't it? And I think just trying to see who plays first, because obviously that also has a difference. So yeah, Antwerp play Club Brugge first.
I really know that Genk always has the last game now for every weekend following. Yeah.
That makes it easy to kind of keep up with. So yeah, I think we've pretty much summed up everything that's happening in the Pro League playoffs. One game left to go in the Challenger Pro League, Scott, and it almost looked like everything was decided this weekend. A lot of crazy action went on down there, didn't it?
It did indeed, and it looked for a short period as if Beveren had kind of blown it before they'd even have a chance to kind of get on parity. But they came from behind this weekend to win. Quick rundown on the results, or at least the key ones anyway. In playoff two, SL16's draw with Vertonghen relegates Vertonghen, or does it? The legal challenge will roll on for a little while. Not suspect it's going to have the outcome that Vertonghen actually want, but as of now, they are officially relegated. In playoff one, as Ben was saying, it's going to go to the absolute wire, as we all thought it probably would. Both Molenbeek winning 3-1 against Club Next, and Beveren, as I was saying, turning it round against Leers to come away with a 3-2 win at the weekend, which now means with one game to go, It's about who can hold their nerve. And this weekend, both sides are at home and they both kick off at the same time as they should. So Beveren at home to Club Next and Molenbeek are at home in Brussels to Anderlecht Futures. So get the features on and get a cold beer on the go at Saturday tea time because that's the ones to watch because they're going to be biggies. And I'm really looking forward to seeing who can finally do it and who can hold their nerve.
Me too, and I will come back to that point I said before. It's unfortunate. I'm in favor, or like I'm relatively indifferent, but a bit in favor of the under 23 teams being inside the league. But I it's a bit unfortunate that they have to play both. This kind of sides now and not like next season that. I feel like they should be excluded from the playoffs in general, actually. And from next season on, that is fixed. But for this season, I feel like it's actually less exciting than it should have been like this.
Yeah, it's interesting, isn't it, that you know that both sides are obviously playing under 23 sides, and that's going to be a factor in it. And there's been a lot of talk actually this week, guys. I don't know what you think about, you know, how motivated are a young Anderlecht side going to be coming into this game? How motivated are Club Next going to be? They've had a very good playoffs, actually. Much better, I think, than probably even they expected to have. It's just kind of unfortunate that both Molenbeek and Beveren are playing under 23 sides and they're going to have a factor in kind of considering this. So there's been some cynicism in certain quarters this week as to how both these games could go because of that, which is unfortunate. But I think it's going to be exciting. And the truth is, both these sides have been quite a bit ahead of the other side in terms of quality and consistency. And in some ways, it's unfortunate that only one of them is going to get a chance to go up this year. Because although I think it's going to be much harder to get out of the division next year because of some of the sides coming down and the fact it's going to be larger, in some ways, you could argue it's easier because of the way that the playoffs are going to work next year because they're going to change again. Within theory, the side that finishes sixth could go up because it's going to be about the top six in the playoff, rather than who we have at the moment. So it just depends on which way you look at it. But there's been plenty of excitement in this division this year. And, you know, for those who haven't been paying any attention, then, you know, we need to pay it more attention. And we try very hard here at the BFP to cover it as much as possible because there's plenty of excitement down there.
Yeah, and I do feel like I'm very excited about at least the Challenger Pro League next season. I think this time that format is probably the best that's been there for a while, for sure. Especially, there's going to be that weird, getting ahead of myself here, of course, but that weird feeling like the team that comes out of the playoffs for the third promotion spot will come out in a very positive vibe, and the team that they have to play will come out of a playoff with a very negative vibe. So I can't wait.
Yeah, I think as well, like, you look at that Beveren side and this Molenbeek side and you think they're probably definitely better than some of the Pro League sides we had this year, it felt like, for sure. So it'll be interesting to see whichever one of those comes up, how they get on. We spoke about them a little bit last week, didn't we, Scott? But we asked a question from Richard David Pike about our thoughts on RFC Liège returning to 1B next season. I know you went away and had another little look to find out a little more kind of information, a couple more obscure facts maybe. So we kind of delegate this question over to you.
Well, we were kind of talking last week about this, weren't we, Ben, about, you know, how this is a historic tradition club being promoted. And you know, those who know their Belgian football well will know that this club are no strangers and have done things. So it's nice to see them getting a little bit of success and coming up a division again. The interesting thing about them coming up to this level is they're reasonably well placed. You know, they have a decent support. You know, they've done things in the game as well. As I was talking about last week, they've won a number of titles. You know, they're not an obscure little side, if you like. One of the interesting things about them, which I only discovered when I was doing a little bit of digging this week, was of their squad, they've only got four non-Belgians in a squad of 22, which is a very positive thing. But there's a reasonable amount of experience in that squad as well. You know, the average squad age is around 26. And in terms of experience, there are three players in that squad who, although on the aged side of the scale now, do actually have Pro League experience, decent Pro League experience. Jeremy Perbe, who's 38 now, so it'll be interesting to see if he's tempted to do another year, I think. I suspect he might be. Yannick Luemba and Benjamin Lambeau as well have Pro League experience. So there's a reasonable base there, you know what I mean, to settle down some of the younger players in the squad. But in truth, when you look at where a lot of the players have played, a lot of them have experience of what would be considered CPL level in the past as well. So they're quite well placed to do all right. You know, they have a T1 in Gaetan Engelbert, who knows the club really well, former academy director there. Belgian under 15 coach as well for a little while. Has been head coach for about 18 months. And they're a stable club, I suppose. You know, they were very unlucky not to come up last season as well. So this isn't really a shock. This is just something that, you know, has had a slight delay, if you like. So I expect them to do okay next season.
I believe that Perbe is going to sign for a different club for next season, but he definitely will play one year more year. He has been crucial for them, though, of course, just looking at the numbers, 24 goals for them at his age, so they have to replace him. That's already one thing that's, if they will need to have to replace him, and anyway, at that age, I guess it's still better to have someone behind him already as well, but I'm not that deep into that club at the moment. But it's also interesting anyway that, with Virton now officially... Well, unofficially relegated, at least with Standard Liège 16, then not relegated for sure. Let's put it that way. Then there will be three Liège clubs in the second division. So that's another factor of excitement in that in that regard.
It's interesting, isn't it, guys, actually, just before Ben comes back in, you know, we're talking about experience there and how important that is at this level. Look at this weekend. I mean, Mbakani at Beveren, he's scored 13 in 22 this season, and, you know, he's 37. So, you know, experienced players who are fit for their age and motivated, I've got a tremendous amount to kind of offer at this level, and these two players kind of prove that.
Yeah, I think with Mbakani as well, you just look at him and you can tell it's like he is fit. Do you know what I mean? Like, you can tell clearly seems to do the right things in terms of off the pitch. Maybe he's like Victor Boniface when he said that all his muscles were a gift from God. Maybe that's the same for Mbakani. He's just naturally gifted athlete. But yeah, he is quite an athletic guy anyway. And he definitely knows where the goal is, that's for sure. A team that could probably do with him would be Mechelen. And we'll just quickly go to our final listener question, which is from Matt Freighton. And he asks, I'd love to hear your view on where Mechelen go now. They've been ravaged by injuries, but is that enough of an excuse for this season, or should questions be asked of De Four?
It feels like we've been talking about this for kind of ages. They need a reset of sorts. They've been plagued with injuries, to be fair to them. And that's led to a season of pretty, you know, rampant inconsistency, which they've not been able to iron out to any extent. The two things that jump out to me are they need to sort the striking option. Both Milady and Ngoy haven't worked so far for whatever reason. I know injuries, again, I've had a factor in this, but they need to address that big time in the summer. They are talking to Smail Prevoyak, who obviously is a proven striker, so I'll be interested to see if they can get something over the line there, because, you know, he would be a really good pickup for them. The other area I think they desperately need to do something about is in the middle of the park. They've looked very, very light there, and that's led to them getting overrun and a lot of pressure on a defence which has been pretty brittle at the best of times anyway. So they need to do something there. And it's just unfortunate that a really good defensive midfielder like Samuel Ngui, who's still at the club, who's been out of favour, has just been out of the picture this season. So they need to look at addressing that as well. The De Four question is a much bigger kind of existential one. I think he has probably earned the right to start next season and to see how he goes in the first 10 or 12 games to see if that consistency can be ironed out. But I think he'll need a positive start, because there'll be questions asked if he doesn't. I think people know that my own long-term view is I'm not convinced, but I do think he deserves that 10 or 12 games at the start of next season to show what he can do with some new faces and a chance to plug some of the problems that have plagued them this season.
Yeah, I think that's a good summary. I'm slightly worried for them for next season. There's a lot of the work to go for them, but well, we've all been wrong in these assessments, and it's way too early to tell, but yeah, they will have to get a few things, a lot of things right, actually, this summer, I believe, to have a calm season, let's say.
Yeah, I think that's pretty much spot on. I think this summer is quite important. It was like an important moment for the club in terms of which direction they want to go in. Do they want to be pushing up, or are they going to be kind of constantly looking over their shoulder? It feels like this summer could be one that kind of makes a difference on that. I think that is probably all we have time for this week. We also got it out a little bit earlier than last week, so I hope you all enjoyed that and managed to listen to last week's one before this one. But as always, Scott and Joris, it's been a pleasure.
Yep, always a pleasure, never a bore. And we'll see you next week, everybody. And we will know by that time who will be playing in the Pro League, the full schedule.
Yeah, definitely looking forward to that. And of course, there's a lot of things going on. It's the exciting time of year in the Pro League. And let's see how everything pans out and how the situation will be next
week.
Yeah,
it could be all changed next week. Who knows what it's going to look like. But if you've enjoyed listening to this episode, please do leave us a review on your podcast app of choice. You can also get in touch with us to ask some listener questions as well, which we've obviously answered during this podcast. So if you want to get involved, just head over to our Twitter account and you can do it there. But yeah, as always, thank you very much for listening, and we'll see you soon on another episode of the Belgian Football Podcast.